Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I never put much thought into tires in the past. The thought was always to drive what comes on my vehicle, and if I had to replace them, I made my decision based on price. Our friends at Cooper Tires know what they're talking about. Cooper has been an American company since 1914, with more than a century in the tire industry. Each Cooper Tire undergoes rigorous testing and are backed by warranty, so you can trust that they'll last for thousands of miles. The Coopers pride themselves on good merchandise, fair play, and a square deal. Always have and always will. Don't overpay or underbuy. Cooper Tires do what tires should do and cost what tires should cost. All Cooper Tires are backed by a limited warranty, a 45-day test drive warranty, and select products are backed by tread wear mileage warranty, helping to give you confidence on the road. For complete product and warranty details, please visit www.coopertires.com or www.coopertires.ca. And remember, go with the Coopers.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Crash Course Podcast. Solly here, joined by the connoisseur of private golf in the Northeast, Neil Schuster. Today we're going to be talking about Manufacturers Golf Club. Neil, how are you?
I'm doing great. You know, member guest season's heating up. I don't have any invites on the calendar. You know, we need
to change. Are you begging for invites? Are you putting a call out on the Crash Course?
I'm putting a call out there. If you need somebody, my game's trending.
All right. How many member guest titles have you won in the Northeast?
Just the one day ones. No. I'm a runner up at the Rockaway Hunting Club one. Won a one day one at Baltusrol, the Creek. It's no big deal. Don't worry about it.
Okay. Yeah. I wouldn't know. I don't. These opportunities don't come my way. So I'm just hoping you can shed some light on what these experiences have been like. Today, manufacturers. So we were on a trip in Philadelphia last month. We actually were able to, you know, squeeze in some extra golf on the trip that we were on. We allotted the proper time to get what I would call the full Flynn experience up in Philadelphia. What can you tell us? Set the scene for Manufacturers Golf Club.
I absolutely loved the setting, the infrastructure, and this place has a lot of history. So I was looking it up after we played, and it was founded as an eating club by a group of textile industrialist managers in 1887. So they actually had a club like downtown Philadelphia, just kind of a social club. And then they moved in 1925 out to where it is currently, Ridgewood Farm area, I think northwest of the city. And then, you know, William Flynn designed the golf course. And it was also in this exact area in November of 1777, George Washington established the White Marsh encampment. Do you know what that is?
I do, and I did not know that until preparing for this podcast. The whole time we were out there, I did not know that.
The Continental Army, baby. They spent 6 weeks out there trying to, you know, protect supplies for Philadelphia. The Redcoats tried to come out and, it sounds like they did a little guerrilla warfare, and then everybody skedaddled, and then Valley Forge was where they camped for the winter. So that was cool. It's just like right on the property was where the Continental Army was hanging out way back in the day. So I love that kind of stuff, and I felt like the property, it felt like a giant crater. And the clubhouse sits up on the highest point, way up on one side of this rim, and then you drop down in right off the first tee. You know, kind of a shot that reminded me of Riviera, the first tee out in L.A., just from TV. I've never played there, but kind of one, you know, very much a handshake opener. And then you kind of weave in and out, and then, you come back out, and on the back nine, you almost play around the rim, like I think the south side of the property, or kind of like the far side of the property, and then you come back, you know, on 18, come back up to the clubhouse. So both nine and more so 18, you got to finish kind of with these uphill shots or these greens that are built into this hill with the clubhouse above. So it gives a really good setting, you know, big kind of estate. The clubhouse is very, very regal looking up on the hill. big stone clubhouse.
Yeah, the stones, which were dug out from the limestone from the quarry in which the eighth hole was built, which we'll talk about, was used for the clubhouse. And it's awesome. It's majestic. It reminded me of St. George's Hill in London, just how high up on this hill, this mound, or this almost mountain that the clubhouse sits, looking down on the whole property. You can see it from the whole golf course. And again, characterized what golf courses were like that were built in the 1920s. It's all in one big field. The holes all kind of run next to each other. Of course, the outside holes touch up against boundary properties and out of bounds and whatnot. But for the most part, there's a hole next to you. You can see the other people playing the golf course, and it's not weaving through neighborhoods and needs to be tackled in a golf cart, which is something that I really enjoy. Although this course is much better enjoyed, I think, in a cart because of how severe some of the ups and downs are. But it
felt like a bigger ballpark than, say, like Rolling Green, where it's not – I didn't think it was a long golf course, but there's a lot of I don't want to say dead areas, but like heather grass, mm-hmm. which – when you have these long sight lines, you can see all the way across the property. It's cool when you get the like visual juxtaposition of like green fairways, really high heather grass, and then the next fairway. And so you don't feel – it doesn't feel tight, but you are kind of switching back on holes. Mm-hmm. So I think the land is used really well. It doesn't feel like it's claustrophobic at all.
Awesome green shapes and complexes and firmness and speed. And, you know, we touched on this in the Rolling Green episode, that the greens were just dialed up too much, whereas manufacturers felt like it was playing at the exact proper firmness and speed for what the challenge was in front of us, right? It was possible to get close to holes, possible to hole putts, yet at the same time, there's some big slopes, big gradual slopes on these greens that if you're not careful, you're still running one way by if you're not aware of how downhill a putt might be or where the influences are on the green and where you want to be coming in from, you know, into some of these greens. It was a full-on test and challenge, and I'm very much here for manufacturers. I was quite impressed by it. So what sticks out to you, I guess, I think it's a good course to kind of go through, not necessarily hole by hole, but I'd say in preparing for this, the holes were extremely easy to remember a few weeks later, and I would say that is – one, not always the case, and two, definitely a sign of a good golf course.
Agreed. Yeah. I think the first couple, the first one felt very handshakeable, and then the second one I think is we played a temporary green, but I really like the look of that where you're approaching it over a creek.
But did you get caught like I did with after the first hole? I was like, oh, a little drive and pitch course. Here we go. Let's go get after it.
And
not the case.
And specifically for the par three, that was like a, you know, that was a devilish little hole. And then it starts in number five. I really liked five. You're hitting over this creek again. Similar to Rolling Green. There's not, you know, other than a couple holes with the quarry on it, which are great, there's not a it's very subtle hazards, very subtle issues where you're like, oh, I should be fine there. And then you're like, actually, I'm not fine there. I'm on the wrong side of the fairway. And, you know, there's a big number waiting for me up at this green. So that's the kind of – it's good. It's kind of a sign or I think symbolic of Philly golf of like you're – you know, you better watch out because you're going to get beat up if you're not careful around here.
Well, and that's what I just, you know, once you get to, three is a long par four that plays, you know, the approach shot plays uphill to a big green, but heavily contoured green for a par four of that length. And then the number four, that par three you mentioned, it's building like the side of a hill. And I just kept looking at that hole with admiration of like, how did they make this in the 1920s, right? I mean, how did they carve out tee boxes? Were they playing off level lies? This green sits flat-ish, but like the rest of the hole all sits on this side hill. And then you climb up up the hill to tee off on five. And again, this tee box is just kind of built into the side of this hill that is tough to traverse. It's a tough little climb on foot up these hills. And I just had great appreciation for all the way that they use the natural land shape, yet shape tee boxes into these holes to work against the edge of the property.
And I think it's where we kind of learned about the Golf Association of Philadelphia, the gap, and the inner. We mentioned on the Rolling Green pod that we did, but the inner club matches. This place struck me as like, if you're going, like, there's probably, I don't know how many courses they play at, but how much fun would it be to go around and play competitive rounds at these places? And it just, God, that just seemed like so much fun. And all these clubs have like four or five teams. it just feels like an awesome, awesome environment. If you're, you know, if you're trying to play golf competitively, this was a perfect course for that kind of competition.
Well, and I felt a little just exposed on some of these courses in general, just from playing so much Florida golf. I feel like I've gotten maybe, you know, too dialed into just what are very flat shots, balls sitting very level in terms of where it is in relation to my feet, shots not playing, you know, rather up or downhill. Whereas I felt like at Manufacturers is a great place, like to your point, where you have, it is a full-on test. Like, it's every aspect. It's much more, I always, whenever the ball's above my feet or below my feet or I'm playing up or downhill shots, I always feel way more connected this is super douchey. I feel much more connected to the game, right? Whereas, you know, you're playing the game of golf versus playing golf swing. And on Florida, when you're, the shots just become very stock, I feel very much connected to my golf swing. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It's almost similar to playing in the wind.
Yes.
Where it's like, okay,
just feel it out.
You got to feel what I'm going to do here. This ball's, it has to come out left to right. It's below my feet, but you know, so you got to kind of compensate. It's total feel. And I play better. I think it makes me a better golfer when I'm thinking that way, instead of just, you know, hit this stock shot exactly 172 from a flat line.
Mm-hmm. And gosh, I feel like we could almost break down every hole that finishes the front nine. You know, there's six is a great par three up the hill, long iron par three. I noticed this. This was a theme at a lot of the courses. Is like your long irons get a workout on par threes. And I think, you know, I don't know if that's modernization of the game that these holes have been lengthened some, or, you know, just back in the day, par threes were viewed as like almost like drivable fours. That's what they felt like. They were. I think we had to hit four or five irons on the uphill par three sixth, and then the par fives are never long at these places. Very gettable seventh hole, but then you turn over to the eighth, and for me, it's an obvious choice. But that was the highlight hole of the entire trip.
The quarry hole.
I mean, it's just sick. This awesome short par three. It sits between, you know, between mounds across this quarry. You almost get more of appreciation for the shot once you get up to the green. I think it played like 118 or something for us on this day. And yeah, it really stuck out. And as soon as you drive around the hole to the back part, you look back and like, holy shit, this hole, one, is very different than the rest of the course, and two, just awesome par three.
It reminded me a ton of the Mass hole in at Waterville in Ireland. You know, just kind of taking what is supposed to be just a short par three and giving it a little character. I think they used the stone in there to build the clubhouse. I hope that I heard that right. But
you heard that from me earlier on in this episode. You're exactly correct.
Yeah. So it's a great it's a great little story and kind of, I don't know, a unique hole on the course. I think there's also 16, which yes, I absolutely loved, which has a quarry on the right side of the green. I thought that was my favorite hole out there all day. Kind of a shorter par four. You can hit driver up the left or kind of lay back, you know, and not challenge the bunker and the quarry. But then if you're on the right, if you miss right, you have a blind shot in over this quarry that runs right up almost like a lake would, right on the edge of the front right of the green. So I thought that hole was really unique and very strategic. I thought that was my favorite.
We got to talk about you hit one. I forget what you hit off the tee, but you kind of pushed it short right, the last place you really want to be on that hole, in the right rough. Firm greens, this whole quarry that you have to cover getting into the green. You had 160 in. Can we talk about the club choices that went on in this part of the process? I've been waiting to talk to you about this.
Yeah, well, we kind of had to figure out, do some Pythagorean theorem to figure out how far I was, because we couldn't get a look at the flag from where I was. So I think we came up with like 160, and I had to clear, the pin was up, so I was like, I got to clear 155 at least, and I think I wanted to just a classic case of, well, I just want to clear. I want to clear the hazard. You know, I'm hitting eight. I want to clear the hazard.
You wanted seven iron. Wanted to hit seven.
I was like, I'm taking this is the thing in front of me. I'm taking it out of play. And we went back and forth. I ended up hitting nine iron, and I cleared the hazard, I think barely. And then, of course, I think I got a tough bounce off the fringe, and it rolls all the way to the back of the green. I made a comfy five, but it was a good process, and it was a good shot of blind, you know, blind nine iron that I'm just praying carries at least 156, and it did.
I went through a bit of a crisis in that moment. Was like, all right, you're my partner. We're at a key part in the match. We needed to win the hole to stay alive. We're playing an awesome match against Sean, our host, and then Chris, who's an awesome mid-am player in Philly. And I had a choice in that moment. Was like, man, if he hits 7-iron, this is going to go so comically far over the green, and it might be kind of funny. I might just let him do it. Or, like, are we trying to win this match? Because I almost tried to get you to hit wedge because it was out of the rough. Like, a ball was going to jump.
And it wasn't a great lie, though. And if no. I did hit 7, I would have been choking up. And but it wasn't the right club. I came to the right decision. I just had to get there myself. But you did. I do want to call out that, you know, speaking of Philly golf and just, like, it feels like there's some dudes out there. And Chris was
an absolute
dog. Like, the way he hit the golf ball, and he's playing in all these club matches, I'm like, man, there are some studs playing around here. You would get really good at golf if you're playing Philly golf on a daily basis, on a weekly basis. So I just want to shout out, give Chris a shout out for just hitting the shit out of the golf ball all day.
And just, like, pure, not just, like, recklessly bashing it, but pure and long. Like, he was, yeah. I think he said he hit his driving iron, like, 255 comfortably in the air. And I believe every bit of that. Like, he hit, I am not, you and I are both not short hitters by any means. And there was a par 3 where I hit 4-iron and he was hitting 6-iron. And was just like, yeah. Oh, that, all right, that's what a real mid-am player looks like.
He had some serious compression.
Yes.
It kind of had the short backswing going too, you know, like a Rahm and Finau vibe going, where he just generated a ton of speed in a very compact swing.
I want to shout out the ninth hole as well. Short par 5 that plays dead straight back up to the clubhouse. It's only about 480, something like that. But I found this a very good hole. It's you know, you got to hit the fairway because it's really hard. You play the second shot plays kind of down and back up severely to this green side. It's a heavily two-tier green, big backstop on the upper tier, and then the front part of the green, which is where the pin was, is split. You know, there's a huge tier that it sits right down the middle of the green. And so if you hit it on the back part of that green, if the greens were any faster than they were, you could not keep it on the green. I hit it up there in two. I hit like a 8-iron or a 9-iron out of the rough that jumped and just got all the way to the back. And I honestly was looking at places to putt it into the rough. It's kind of like the 16th green at Positempo, but just two tiers instead of three. In terms of if you try to putt it down that tier, it is going to go off the green and then 50 yards back down the fairway. And I decided to just go for it, and I hit the perfect putt, and it was maybe one or two revolutions away from going all the way down 50 yards down the fairway. But it's a short 5. Like, that's the defense. The defense is the green. Don't end up on the wrong tier, and you can make an easy birdie. But if you are on the wrong tier, it becomes a struggle for par. And I found that to be an interesting golf hole.
Yeah. We got to talk about 18 as well. The two green situation on 18. So there's an upper green, and then there's a lower green, which we played too. As I think we played it as a par 4 to the lower green. I loved it. I thought I could see how people would view it as a little gimmicky, but it almost creates this you know bet hole, or you know, kind of a bet settler of like par 3, where you can play this really really uphill par 3 after playing the par 4, the lower green. Or you can play the 18th as a par 5 and play all the way up this hill to the clubhouse. And, of course, to get up to that green, you got to take this old-school elevator trolley, you know.
Funicular thing. Kind of thing.
I loved it. That was awesome. The best infrastructure maybe that I've seen. And you know how much I love infrastructure. Just truly old-school mechanical engineering up the hill. Throw your bag on. It felt like I was, you know, we were riding up a roller coaster.
I love par 5s, so when they were like, yeah, there's a par 4 or a par 5, we can play either one. I was like on the tee, like, oh, let's play the par 5. Like, come on, I want a birdie. And then you see where what the hole is and where the green is. It's so dramatically uphill that it's like not even reachable in two. And I was kind of like, ah, yeah, I'm good. We can play the lower green. That's fine. I think the hole's a lot better with the lower green. It's a really cool green site and a cool green. And then, yeah, you can use that upper green as kind of a – you can hit a pitch up the hill and play that as a 19th hole or a bet settler, like you said. I like the course playing that way more than playing up the par 5.
And so. It's cool. I also got the sense, going back to the, you know, the competitive golf vibes that we were seeing, how that's an arena at the end of, you know, like, again, like RIV, you know, people sitting on that hill watching groups come in. If it's a club championship, it just feels like a really good – finisher for the club, the community, for people to watch any tournaments that are coming in. So I thought that was a good finishing hole.
I thought the 14th hole was really good too, a par four. It's tough. It's got a really cool kicker on the front left that helps you kind of run balls up. The whole hole kind of cants from left to right. And I think I preferred the front nine over the back nine, but the 14th hole really kind of stuck out to me as being one of the better holes on that back nine. But another, the 11th hole too is another uphill long iron par three. It's similar to that sixth hole. And then another long par three, the 13th hole. This is kind of what I started to realize, that the men were separating from the boys. You and I lost, I think, four straight holes there and kind of got our clocks cleaned a little bit. We won the front nine, if I may say, but the boys, the Philly boys closed us out pretty easily, handily on the back nine.
Yeah, you nailed it earlier. You kind of lulls you into thinking you're just going to hit, driver wedge. And I hit a ton of long irons.
Yeah.
Not only on the par threes, but just trying to get in the right spot off the tee on some of these par fours, you're laying back and hitting six and seven irons in.
And it's not a crazy long golf course, right? It's not, it's not 500-yard par fours. It's just the way the contours worked, and it was difficult. It was a great challenge, and I walked off feeling like, ooh, I play here every day, I'd get a lot better at golf. But
all right, well, what'd you shoot?
I don't know. What did I shoot? I think 76, 77, something along those lines. Does that sound right?
Yeah, I think so. I shot 82.
Okay.
And I played, again, I thought I played good. I had a few train wrecks, one or two doubles. Definitely two doubles at least. Kind of lost the momentum. But, listen, we're trending in the right direction. 82 is one of those numbers I hate, though. Like, if I shot 83, I'd be like, I didn't have it today. If I shot 81, I'd be like, all right. But when 82 is just that number for me, it just pisses me off. Yeah. It's like it always ends up, it's like magnetic for me, which bugs me.
I had 37-40. I hit one OB on the fifth hole, which was totally inexcusable. Doubled the par three, 11th hole. I had a double bogey stretch on 11 through 13 that really hurt. The rest of the day, I actually played pretty decent on this day, but gosh, just felt very exposed, like you said, against Chris in terms of what a real mid-am player looks like.
But I will say we won the front nine.
Yeah,
that was. And then we got our clocks cleaned on the
We were the, talking the trash, the too. They took it. They very much took it personal.
Starting on 10, it was just like, all right, I guess we're not. Yeah, that's not. This isn't happening anymore.
But we had a lunch out on the patio, like you said, kind of looking down at the whole arena and the whole ballpark. And it was a place that it felt very just home, local, like of a place I would absolutely be thrilled to be a member. And I don't know what the rates are like. But just in talking to some people at other clubs in the area, I think we'd be very pleasantly surprised at the affordability of a lot of the second tier clubs in Philadelphia. It's not the same, like it doesn't seem like it's price gouging out there.
Well, it seems like there's a lot of competition.
Right, yeah.
Exactly. So they kind of, there's a lot of options if you want to play golf in Philly. If you want to join a club, it seems like there's a lot of places to do it, and you'd be happy with most of them. So I didn't know anything about manufacturers, and I was very pleasantly surprised.
Well, I was hoping you would sneak in some kind of thing like, I'm a strap boy, like manufacturers, kind of the blue collar place.
For sure. Of course that speaks to me. That's why I love the trolley. Like, God, that thing, the chains were so greased up. Like, I just thought those chains were going to snap when we were heading up the hill.
And I was going to hit you with the membership. The original membership was made up largely of textile manufacturing executives from the area, which is it's just perfect. Like that's exactly your vibe. Fake strap, but really you're the exec.
Listen, they're making shit. I'm making apparel. They were making textiles. I would have fit right in out there.
The textile exec.
Back when they Neil made Schuster. Shit in this country. That's what manufacturers is all about.
All right. Anything else from Manny's, which is the local slang? Now that we've played there, we can call it Manny's. But anything else you want to get off your chest?
No. I think we nailed it.
So, definitely a place we'd love to revisit. Yet at the same time, gosh, there's just so many, as we've said, so many damn good places in Philly that we want to try to get to as many as possible. So, thanks to Sean for having us out. Thanks to the club for having us out and for whooping our ass in the match. And we'll get revenge one of these days. So, Neil, thanks for helping me debrief, bud. Talk to you later.
Of course. See you, buddy.
Cheers.